Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with a friend of mine and a very special guest, Joe Thompson. Joe has been an investigator for over 20 years, has his own paranormal team, and he works in some kind of unique areas. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Oh, can't complain, and I suppose if we do, the listeners won't like it anyway, right?
Probably. They might laugh, though.
So I know we've been on before, but since the radio changeover, a lot of the listeners may not know who you are. So let's just start by you introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about how you got into the paranormal and what you do.
All right. Well, my grandmother got me involved in the paranormal. We used to talk a lot about the about ghosts and spirits and all sorts of things that go bump in the night. When I was starting about third grade, I'd go across the street from the school to her house on weekdays for lunch. And we'd sit there and make lunch and talk about all sorts of ghost stuff. And then we'd go adventuring, looking through caves and looking for petroglyphs and rubbings on tombstones and everything. It just got me interested. And then I joined the Navy in 85 and went over to Italy and met a couple of people that were really interested in the paranormal. And they got us into castles and old houses and things like this that we could go explore with our old cassette tape recorders and film cameras, and I just loved it from that moment on. I've been doing investigations ever since.
And you and I actually talked about that a little earlier on the older film. I actually prefer the older film sometimes because you don't have a lot of the unusual glitches that you do now on digital and digital audio.
Right, you don't see as many orbs.
Yep.
Not so many orbs. If you do see one, it's a real one.
Along with other things, I mean, mist tends to show up differently on old film cameras. Even some of the, how do you put that? Some of the anomalies that just fly around in the air that aren't even orbs, like insects and so forth. It's just easier to tell what's what sometimes.
it really is. Yeah, you don't get as many dust orbs. If you do, they're very, very light in the background. You can barely see them. And most of those all show up as anomalies on your digital camera.
So let's talk a little bit about your investigations. I know that you've done quite a few, and of course you took a break for a little while for health issues and just started to jump back into it. And I'm sure the listeners would like to hear about those investigations a little bit. So let's just kind of start from the beginning and work to where you are now.
Boy, lots of different stuff. We've been doing investigations here in California since about 2001. I moved out here in 96 and did a few things on my own, you know, as I could. And I put together a group about 2001. And people leave, come in, leave, and, you know, it changes all the time. I've now got a brand new group. Everyone has contacted me and wanted to join the group. And we've got seven people right now. We've done a couple of really interesting investigations recently. And we take a different approach than some people do. It's more of a three-legged approach where we do the team is a mix of older and younger. We've got three younger people right now, 19 to 21 years old. And then we've got the three olders, 50s and 60s, basically. Four olders right now. Mel just joined us. So we have that separation, that age separation, which kind of works really well with us because they provide a lot of extra energy. And then us old folks just hang around and enjoy the energy. But we use technical, of course, you know, the cameras, the devices, and all the nice little tools and things that go beep. Plus, we use the metaphysical. We have a medium, a very good physical medium. We have an empath on the team. And we have a clairaudience on the team as well. This all seems to work very well together because with the metaphysical side of it, working with the technical side of it, we can sometimes blend it all together. The third leg is the research and the history. And our Kathy does that for us. She does a fantastic job of researching locations down to as far back as she possibly can. And this allows us to match what we find in a location with the history as best we possibly can. And it does match up pretty well in a lot of cases. Some cases we just can't find the information that goes back that far. Currently we're working in a building that's it was built in the 70s, and they're having a lot of issues right now. In fact, we're going there tonight a little bit later on to try to do a little bit more investigation there. It's kind of interesting doing this three-legged approach because we get a lot of interest. The clients are more interested because we can provide them with a piece of paper that says, this is what we found, here's our evidence, here's the pictures on a CD or a DVD, here's our pictures, here's our audio that we caught, and here's the history of your location, everything back as far as we could find. And the clients seem to really enjoy that. Even everybody that's lived in the house basically all the way back. It is a really good way of doing it, I think. We all work very well together, and we've just started working together probably the past 2 months, this group in itself, and it's really coming along well. We just did a public paranormal lockdown at the Corona Public Library out here in Corona, California. That was last Saturday night. We had 48 people show up, and five of their teen advisory boards showed up. And we took everybody through the library and had a great night. People loved it. They're sending us their pictures and their videos that they took. We're going through it all, and we'll probably have a presentation at the library later on this next week to show people what we actually found or what was caught in the library.
That's pretty amazing, actually. It's fun when the things start coming together. I like the fact that you've separated things. I think research and history on locations, I guess maybe it's because I started as a researcher, though, is very, very important. You know, the further back you can go, the more you can dig. The strangest, most, what some people would think are obsolete things can leak into very crucial moments that can show that either nothing happened, or every now and then you stumble across something that, even though it's really, really small, a name or a situation or even an image or something along those lines, that ties into the whole thing and answers all the questions.
Exactly. And when Kathy does her research, she doesn't tell us any of it until after we're done with the case. So after we're done with the investigation, then we all sit around and we talk about it. And she reads off what she did, and a lot of times it's, oh, that might match with this, or that might match with this, and we'll all discuss it and see how it works. It's a neat process.
That's a good approach, actually. Most people do the research before they go into the location. They're already preconceived to notions based off of that research. But if you take all of that out and then you present it after you've done everything else, sometimes you find links that weren't there before that's kind of really interesting. I like that approach, actually. I wish more investigating teams would do that. It makes perfect sense to me. I don't know why a lot of people don't. That's how I used to do it with my people that would hire me in research, because I've always been an independent contractor with paranormal research. I would not give my information to them until they already went out to the locations and they did the videotapes and so forth, because I feel it's crucial that you don't know anything that's going on.
Exactly. We've got three ladies and four guys. There's another lady going to be joining us here shortly, so we'll be balanced out again. The ladies do a fantastic job, and they play lead roles in the team. We balance it out. It's really a fantastic group that I've got right now. And, I mean, really, really good people. A couple of techie types, which is very nice because I was doing it all myself. And this is really good that I've got a techie type also to help me out here, running cables, hooking things up, and troubleshooting the gear as we go along. But it's been a lot of fun here the past couple of months with this new team. The older teams that we've had, we've done interesting investigations, old houses, going out to the desert. We go out to the desert every once in a while and find an old ghost town and wander around out there. I've gone out with Murphy Paranormal up in the high desert, and we went out to Horse Thief Springs out by SEMA, California, about 27 miles due west of SEMA. And we had an absolutely fantastic investigation out there. It was just Murphy Paranormal and myself. And I love getting together with other groups as well, because you always learn something new. We're trying to do things with more groups in the area, just to learn, talk, and you know, and help each other out as best we can. It's always good to share what you know, to find out what they know, and we'll all grow that way.
Uh-huh. Absolutely, that was the concept of why, as you know, of Paranormal Truth and Reality. And listeners, so that you're aware, we're actually advancing this in the next year and a half. So I'm not sure, since I kind of have an ugly mug but a great voice, whether I'm going to be the host or not. We might actually hire a host to do this, but we're going to tag along with paranormal teams as a host as they're doing investigations. Joe, I'd love somewhere along the line for you guys to be a part of that. I'd love to be able to fly up to California and just spend about 3 or 4 days on an investigation with you guys and introduce you, record your style, and let people know how investigators work. So keep that in the back of your mind a little bit as we grow, because somewhere along the line, I want to do that, and I'd like to personally visit David Ullman's house anyway. So
I talked to Dave about that the other day, and told him, when you come into town, he says, bring him on up. So we'll go on up there.
Let's talk a little bit about some of your more unique investigations. And I didn't mean to cut you off there. We can also go into what you were about to speak about. But I know originally when you did paranormal investigations, you looked into the more darker side of things from time to time. And that's something I love to address on Paranormal Truth and Reality, because I think people get misconceptions when they hear the word demon and evil. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. I am part of the Order of the Exorcists out here in California. It's a worldwide organization. I just happen to be the Southern California group. We work for the church, and we do investigations on claimed demonic cases. When someone has a demonic claim and they run through the Order of Exorcists, we're one of the teams. Well, we are the team here in Southern California that will go out and investigate that. We ask a number of questions. There's 60 questions altogether, broken up into three different categories. We videotape and audiotape the whole interview with relatives, anybody else that's a witness. Everything is all videotaped. So we build up the evidence that is required for the church to come in and perform an exorcism if necessary. It's kind of interesting in that sometimes you walk into a house that's supposedly that's been reported as demonic, supposedly demonic, and you feel absolutely nothing other than just, you know, it's just a house. And then you start talking to people, and they're telling you their stories. And a lot of times it turns out to be nothing more than just a regular haunting, because demon activity is so rare that, you know, it's not as often as you see it on the TV, where some people run around screaming demon every single episode. It really does not happen that way. We've had 3 demonic cases in the past 4 years, and we've done a great number of investigations in this field. So,
I think the Catholic Church released at one point that it was actually less than 2.5% of the 1% claimed in the past 50 years. Most people, I don't think, actually understand what that means, but that means that literally, guys, you can count on your hand, one hand, not two hands, out of 1% of the claims worldwide, not in the United States, that may have been real demonic activity.
Right. And we had one possession, and we had 2 infestations, or basically infestations. They were just being hassled by something of that level. The thing is, the possession one, we have not been able to finish, because the person refuses to get a physical and a mental evaluation. And we cannot go ahead, and the church will not come in and do a exorcism if that's not there, because if they have a mental issue or something like that, and you do an exorcism, it could hurt them. So we have to make sure that everything is above board, everything is correct, and has been checked.
That's actually a good thing to mention. I was about to ask you that, Joe, just so the listeners know. Now, we've got one of them, obviously. You have to have a physical and mental evaluation. But before you can go to – because people just assume the church is going to come in, they're going to bless a home, they're going to do an exorcism, they're going to kick all the demons out. But they have a specific process that they go through with people like you. And they look for very specific things. Exactly. And they look for very specific things. So let's talk about that a little bit, what you can share, because some of this, obviously, you can't share. It's just a part of the whole organization. Some things they share, some things they don't, listeners. But give us an example outside of the mental evaluation and the physical evaluation of other things that are looked at before they physically agree, okay, there's obviously a demon here, let's go into the home.
Right. One of the things is looked at, this is why we film every single interview, and we film the investigations, because they're looking for expressions on the person's face. The person who maybe, we'll go with a possession, the hardest, you know, the biggest case of all, just to start off with. They'll look at the changes in the person's face as I'm asking the questions. They will look for changes in the area that person is sitting in. Look for changes in the faces of anyone else in the room that's on camera. And it should be everybody else in the room except the investigators. That should all be on camera. The audio, we set a couple of different audio recorders around the room to catch anything that happens to be there that may not be caught on the camera itself. Paranormal is strange like that. There are times when you'll have a recorder sitting 3 feet from another recorder, and you'll hear something, some murmured voice in the air. And you go listen on one recorder, and you'll hear it on the right channel, and on the other recorder, you'll hear it on the left channel. Or you'll hear it on one recorder and not on the other. It's just strange. That's why we use so many recorders when we're doing this. So you're bound to pick up something. The questions that we ask are 60 of them. There are a number of questions that talk about the mental, things that are happening to them mentally, things that are happening to them physically, and things that are happening around them in their home or wherever they happen to go, school, work, whatever. Then once all those questions are done, then we set up and do an investigation of the location where we set up multiple cameras. And we go around asking the questions, doing EVPs, trying to capture anything that these people are reporting is happening. And that's basically the process that we take. Once we're done with the investigation, we'll go through and look through all the evidence, make video snippets of everything that we've got, and the full full interview that we do with them. And we put that onto a DVD or two DVDs, whatever it takes, and submit that with our assessment, what we think is going on. That gets submitted up the chain of command, up to the bishops, and then they will decide what happens with that case.
Well, a lot of times, and I know that listeners are fascinated with paranormal, with possessions, with the abnormally evil things that happen. Facial expressions, guys, it's a very unique thing. Now, I have personally been involved in several situations before I totally backed off. I have a lot of respect for people like you, Joe, because I sat in a room at one point and said, this is just a little bit too far for me. Nope, but, you know, I can't do that. But you can definitely tell that it goes beyond psychological. A lot of times, if somebody truly is possessed, their eyes will change, their face will change, their expression will change, and a lot of times somewhere along the line, their voice will also change. It's not out of parameters like people think, but it does happen.
Yes.
And those are the things that I think the church pays really close attention to, as well as the EVPs and the surroundings and so forth, because every now and then things can just show up, nobody catches.
Right. This possession case, we had taken the audio, and I was almost attacked during the by the person that was being possessed. Her family held everybody back, held her back, and there were three of them holding her back, and she was a little tiny petite girl, and she was pulling them along trying to get to me, and I'm just sitting there looking at her. Are you okay? Would you like some water? And she's just looking at me with these eyes, and she's speaking in some language that I didn't understand. You know, that's the cliche. They always speak in those languages. But this time it was something I had never heard of before. And her voice register had dropped about three levels. She was a lot deeper voiced when she was doing this. We took the video and I cut out the snippet where her voice was, and I sent it off to my friend, who's an anthropology professor over in USC. And he's listened to it, his colleagues listened to it, and they had no idea what it was. Of course, if it was an ancient language like Aramaic or whatever, we don't even know what that sounds like anymore, really. So, I mean, people speak it, but is it the correct inflection? Is it the correct, you know, everything? And that's what they kind of explained to me, that they don't know what it is and they've never heard the language, but it could be something that they know the words for, but they don't know how to properly pronounce.
Big guessing game.
But we had that happen. Yeah, her facial expressions changed a lot, and the tendons in her neck were sticking quite up a bit farther out than they normally would if she was sitting here, you know, pulling, you know, tightening up her neck muscles. So that was a very interesting case. And we're just waiting for, you know, for the family or for the girl to go ahead and do the physical and mental evaluations. And as soon as those are done, everything else is complete, and we can go in and do the exorcism. I don't think she wants it to happen, though.
It's a tough road. The one that I was on at one point, which is why I decided not to be in the room and just simply didn't tag along for another one, we were dealing with, believe it or not, it was a younger child. She was in right before hitting her early teens. And there were Bibles in the house, and there was a priest there at that point because he just happened to be there and brought in the team. And that little girl, believe it or not, stood up, blank-faced, her eyes changed, her facial structure changed, her voice dropped at least, God, I can't even tell you what, it almost sounded like a man's voice at that point, and literally was stating, remove the Bibles. Now, you got to keep in mind, at this point, this child has a speech impediment, just so everybody knows, the listeners know. She has a speech impediment, so it was questioning whether there was a mental evaluation or a mental problem, but when she went to see a psychiatrist, they saw nothing wrong with her except for unusual behavior that didn't fit her a year before. So they couldn't quite explain it after the tests and so forth. She decided to bring the church in and investigating teams in. She doesn't speak very well, but at that moment, she was speaking perfect English, which is almost impossible with her speech impediment and the disease that she had. Literally stated, remove the Bibles from the home. And that just kind of creeped me out at that point. Now, there were a lot of other things that went on, but I'm sure if you would have been sitting there, Joe, you would have probably went, okay, this is a little bit more than coincidence at this point. it's a scary thing, long story short.
It certainly can be.
Let's talk. We've got a little bit of your information on possession out, and let's get on a little bit of a lighter note here. I know you've been on an incredible amount of investigations outside of possession itself. Before we do that, I'm just going to do a little bit of an advertisement here. You're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Digital Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations in the United States. If you ever decide to host your own radio show, go with the best. Go with BBS. The Haunted Hoorah is actually on its October Halloween Fest this weekend with their zombies here in the state of Ohio. They run from 9 p.m. all the way up to 12 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The cost is $20 per person. I hear that there are discounts for students as well as discounts for military. So make sure that you go up there to Ashley and enjoy your Halloween weekend. I've been told, actually, that Ray and Kenny from RIP are going to be doing a live location tonight at 10 o'clock. So if you guys haven't had a chance to tune into them, they're great guys. They're awesome at their podcast and they're awesome at their radio show. Give them a listen tonight. They're going to be live. They're going to be talking some ghost stories from a local area in a haunted house. It'll be a wonderful thing. This is BBS Radio. I'm your host of Paranormal Truth and Reality, Christopher Houston. We're talking with Joe Thompson. Joe Thompson is a 20-year investigator. He's been dealing with the paranormal for quite a massive amount of time. So, Joe, let's just dive back in a little bit. Let's talk about some of your lighter experiences. I know a lot of demonic ends up being haunted cases, and a lot of haunted cases are misunderstood. So give us some examples of what you ran into on things that were not logically explained, so to speak, but easily controllable once you figured out what was going on.
Well, sure. A lot of them are basically spirits that need to move on. You know, we've got We've got some locations where things were being pushed, knocked over, people touched, things moving, the shadows, of course, the shadow figures all over the place going on. And basically what we've come across on a lot of the cases are that, it's people who have a message to pass on. So you gather up the message. We have an empath. We have a medium. We've got a clairaudient who can, all three of them can hear and feel what's going on. So with that, we try to go in and figure out what that story is and help that entity, whatever it happens to be, cross over if they wish to go. So it's kind of you got to go in and get the feel of the place. You got to find out what's going on and try to figure it out. That's why I really like having the metaphysical portion of it as well as the technical. Because with the technical, sure, you can detect things, you can record voices, you can do all sorts of neat stuff with it. But with that metaphysical, you kind of get the story behind it. You get the clairaudient who can hear things. You get the empath who feels what's going on and can basically tell you the story. And the medium can talk to them and hear what's going on. You get the other parts of the story that the empath may not be able to pick up. And then when you get the whole thing together, you throw in the history that Kathy's gone in and got for us, and we'll put it all together and decide what needs to be done. Is it just a house blessing? Is that all we need to do? Is there maybe by any chance a portal in the house that got opened somehow? And we need to get that closed and clear the house out. I mean, there's so many different possibilities that you just have to go in there, investigate, put it all together, and figure out what's happening and how you take care of the issue.
I actually like the fact that you say portal as opposed to doorway. One of my big pet peeves, as you know, is that term doorway, because a doorway signifies it's a two-way street. That means people can come in the doorway and you can also go out the doorway, which means technically if there's something evil, good or otherwise, that's coming through, you theoretically should be able to see it and walk back through to go wherever they are. A portal's a little different. Portals can have a two-way street, but according to science, generally don't have a two-way street. Things come through from one side, nobody knows where from.
Right.
Or,
and then they show up,
versa.
And now you've got a plethora of ghosts in your house, and you don't know why.
Yeah, or how it happened.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes it could be from the people who lived there before, or people who lived on the property 100 years ago. Who knows? But that doorway, or that, not doorway, that portal is there, and it's open, and things can move through it and meander on through your property. Some stay, some just keep walking on. It's really hard to say. It depends on the location, what the history of the place is, what kind of emotional state the family or people living in there is. I mean, if they're drama and they're arguing and they're doing, you know, not good family stuff, there's going to be a lot of extra energy, and it'll attract those negatives. And those negatives then could cause all sorts of issues in the house.
I think a lot of people don't understand that negative and positive energy, no matter how you define it, actually exists. It's like walking into a crowd full of people and doing a motivational speech. If everybody is energized and everybody believes and everybody's having fun, you can feel that in the air.
Right.
And the negative is the same way. If one person is upset, I use this as an example all the time when I'm training people in call centers in the marketing world. If you've ever been in the business world, guys, and let's say you're sitting in a group full of hundreds of seats in little cubicles, all it takes is one person being upset or negative, and they will pass it to all 100 people in that room. That's how negativity
apple
spoils
works. A bunch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
exactly
how negativity works. So it wouldn't surprise me that you're walking into these homes, and if there's negativity there, if there's a lot of arguing and terrible things that are going on, that somehow that's impacting things. And if
right.
there is truly something out there that feeds off of negativity, it would make sense that that would attract to the negative sources that are there.
Absolutely. And it happens more often than you think. you know, especially if you got teenagers in the house. You know, they talk about poltergeists and all that stuff. That's usually just wild energy. I also think that it could be a Uyghur ghost attaching itself to that wild energy and being able to control it. Either way, it's still the energy built up by the teenage angst and the drama and the everything going on. And we find that quite often. Do you have any kids? Yeah, I've got two teenagers, 14 and 16. Oh, okay. Are they argumentative? Well, yeah, they are. Okay, well, now we know part of the story already, even before we show up at the house. It's very possible that they're causing that energy that's causing a lot of the troubles in the house and making everybody argue with each other because it's so negative a lot of times.
Yeah, but the more negativity builds, the more unusual things can come or show up.
Correct.
And this, I think, is part of the result of poltergeist activity. A lot of people move straight to the ghost, but they don't realize that positive and negative thought and positive and negative energy does travel. If you're really, really upset and angry and you're in a room full of people that are upset and angry, believe it or not, things can fall off of walls at that point.
And fly across the room.
Fly across the room. There's been some really unusual things. There was a test done, and it wasn't Harvard. I wish I could remember the university. I got the video, and I'll actually show you guys if I can pull it up. It's somewhere. They did a test, and they created a negative environment in a controlled area. And believe it or not, a vase of water that was used – it's a pitcher of water that was used to pour in the glasses just shattered for no reason. Now they couldn't read the energy, so they can't positively tell you, yeah, that's what happened, but it didn't happen again. And there was no earthquakes. Right. There was no reason for it shattering. So obviously something could possibly be connected there. So I think a lot of times promoting that positive energy helps.
Exactly. But sometimes it doesn't work because some of the people don't want to promote that positive energy. They're just angry all the way through.
Yeah,
so that makes it really tough on us because we can go in, bless the place, clean the place up, smudge it, whatever needs to be done to get that place nice again. And when we leave, it's wonderful feeling. Everything is lighter. It's like somebody turned the sunshine on in the building. But then if that angry person is still there and they're still angry and yelling at everybody and whatever, it's just going to build right back up again slowly over time, maybe quickly over time, depending on what happens to be there. So it's better to be in a good mood, to not be angry all the time, especially if you think you might be living in a place with spirits, ghosts, whatever.
Yeah, because they get angry too.
Yes, they do. I don't want to listen to this stuff anymore. Here, have a vase. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. I first learned that myself because I was yelling at one point in a place that we lived. And this little old lady died next door. I didn't know this at the time, guys. I had to do research afterwards because we started hearing some unusual things from the neighbor next door. And then she mentioned that she very rarely stays there. She's on the road all the time because she's a truck driver, but she doesn't like staying there. But it was cheap. It was only $350 a month. So she's like, okay, well, I'll eat my meals. I'll go back out of my truck. I'll leave again because every now and then, if she has a bad day, that strange things would happen. But I had a salt shaker fly at my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of started stepping back and realizing, okay, you know, I know that I train all the time that, you know, the more positive you are about things, the more you can see the positive in everything, the better off you are in life and the more good things come to you. But I need to start thinking about this negative thing because obviously things do happen when it's negative. So that's kind of where my approach comes from. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, Joe. Let's get back into portals a little bit. I won't name his last name because he's still working out trying to get on the show, but I have a physicist and he's from a different country. He came up here actually to do some studies in one of the universities, which is how I met him. His name is Tom. That he's fascinated with the paranormal and he's doing a little bit of research. He thinks that these portals are all revolving around the possibility that can be answered by quantum math and quantum physics. He believes that...
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
He believes that we're actually experiencing quantum breaks, so to speak, or quantum breakthroughs, because if everything flies in the new theory, everything flies in motion together in quantum physics. The math adds up, so the past, the present, the future, everything, other dimensions, we're all traveling at the same time, even though we see time differently as we define it. And he also believes that since they are technically streams or bubbles in one theory, streams in another, that there's no reason why these things can't overlap from time to time, causing a breakthrough. So that would explain a lot of things, actually. It would explain the portals. It would explain residual energy. It would explain negative emotion. It would explain positive emotion from time to time, because it all feeds off of this. It would explain virtually everything. I'm interested in getting him on the show, but it was unique that you mentioned that, because it kind of fits.
Right. It does. We've discussed that quite a bit. In fact, my group is getting ready to start a couple of research projects on our own for things that interest us. And, you know, a couple of them are easier. You know, what is a ghost, if that's really easy to explain. But that's, you know, possibly one of them that we're going to do. I would love to do one on portals. I'd love to do a couple on different types of things. And we're all going to get together and research it and put together some stuff and, of course, post it up on our Facebook page and our web page and things and get it going. We'll probably post it up on some of the PTAR stuff as well.
You should research the spider web effect. I did that 2 years ago with Paranormal Research Ohio, and I investigated it, asked a lot of investigators, talked to several physicists. A lot of times when people say they're close to these portals or they're walking to a situation, it's they feel two things. The first thing is a deep feeling in the room or in the area. It just kind of feels muggy and deep. Is the easiest way to explain that. And the other thing is, a lot of times people will say as they get closer to what they feel is the portal, they almost feel like there's a bunch of spider webs or something that just kind of go over them, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. And you feel that all the time in a lot of locations. You'll be walking down the hallway and you think you walk right into a spider web. And it's right across your face or something. Of course, you do the spider dance and you're trying to get this web off of you. Turn on your flashlight, and there's no cobwebs or anything anywhere in the area.
So, yeah, and I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, happens a lot.
And one physicist I talked to said that's a feeling that you can get when you're dealing with electromagnetic energies on a higher level, not just a level like EMF. He says when you're experimenting with trying to do physics breakthroughs, when you're trying to split atoms, when you're trying to deal with energies, when you get closer to that, it's very common for your hairs to stick up. It's very common to feel a form of a spider web on you.
Exactly.
Which I thought is kind of unique. Well, again, that kind of intertwines with the paranormal. A lot of people, I don't think, understand that science and the paranormal does work together. You just have to dig.
Exactly, you do. For instance, we were up at Preston Castle up in Ione, California last August for the Preston Paranormal Convention. Wanted to go up there, and I always wanted to go into the castle anyway. So we go up there. Tam and I, my clairaudient, he and I go up there and hang out. And we meet a couple of neat people, really good people. And we become one of the first groups. There were three or four groups that got to explore the Colonial, which is the Preston Castle was a boys' reformatory, started in the late 1890s. And they had this Colonial that was built in 1913, I believe. And that's where the good boys supposedly stayed. You know, the ones that didn't get in trouble and they could go off and, you know, be in this place before they got out after their 18-month sentence, and then they do their thing. But we got to explore that as one of the first public groups. And I walked into this area where we thought maybe some guards lived. And then we walked down the way where some of the boys were on the first floor. And I had that same exact spider web effect as I'm going about halfway down the hallway. It's like something just walked through me and I'm sitting here doing a spider web dance, you know, because it went right across my face. I had the same thing happen to me at Dave Ullman's house too. On the second floor, halfway down the hallway as I'm walking toward the stairs, I get right in there and I feel something walk through me, and I had spider web effect there as well.
David Ullman, listeners, just so that you know, has one of the most haunted homes in California. It has an incredible history. I won't get into it a little bit, but make sure you look him up a little bit. He's a wonderful guy, a lot of fun to be around. He has a very unique home that a lot of occurrences, they really can't be explained. He has a lot of different things that happen there that don't happen everywhere else.
True. Yeah, I know we were up there one night, there's a two little girl ghosts that run around up in there. And we were playing hide and seek with one of them. And you could just hear her giggling. You'd hear giggling going on, and you'd know she was there. But she always wound up in the garage next door. So we kind of always knew where she was. So we'd go around and call for her, and eventually somebody would open up the door and say, I found you. And you'd hear a giggle, and she, you know, she'd go off and do her thing again. It was a lot of fun. A lot of neat stuff over there.
If you're ever in Ohio, Joe, I'd love to get you up here and just walk you through the Marengo Schoolhouse. We had a unique investigation. A lot of it I found was logical when I went back through. But there were a few incidents that I'm still trying to debunk. And as I get the video together, I'll send it over to RTP and let you guys take a look at it. But one of the things that happened, and I am a firm believer, as you know, that EMF is not logical.
True.
Because there's too many interferences and so forth. But I actually, for 15 minutes, carried on a conversation with an EMF detector on the floor, away from us, that was not going off at all. I moved it as far away from all the electrical as I could because I didn't want it to just start spiking randomly. And it was actually going off to particular questions in the sequence that I asked it to do. At one point, I asked it, okay, so we're going to do one beep for yes, two beeps for no. So that means, you know, draw it all the way up for yes, draw it all the way up twice for no, and I need you to space it about 5 seconds apart or less. Am I speaking to a little boy? It went off. I said, is your name Darren? It went off twice. I said, can you make it go off three times saying my name is Darren? It went off three times and stopped. And then I paused for a minute and said, so just to confirm, am I speaking to a ghost named Darren? It went off one time. And we continued this for 15 minutes.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it was a very unique situation.
The Corona Public Library last weekend, I was back in the adult section with a team of public people with us, and they were fantastic. They were so energized about this thing. And we get back there, and I love my dowsing rods. You know, a lot of people say they're ridiculous, but I love my dowsing rods. And I sit there, and I've got them. I've got the tips pointed down, and I've got the flashlight experiment going on at the same time. And, of course, it's just barely off, and it's sitting there on the table. And I've got witnesses, and I'm sitting here asking questions of the spirit that was standing kind of right behind me. And we're asking questions, and every time my dowsing rods would cross with a yes answer, the flashlight would come on. Then I'd say, thank you, and my dowsing rods would go straight again, and the flashlight would go off. And it did this for quite a bit of time, but every time I'd cross yes, that flashlight would come on again, and then when I'd say thank you, it would go off. That happened. In fact, I'm looking around for the video of that so we could post it up on our site. We're still going through the evidence from last week. A lot of stuff to go through.
It was actually Quentin, not Darren. I apologize. I got the name wrong there. But it was a unique experience because in 22 years of tagging along with teams, you don't see that often. So
no.
It's amazing when you run across things like that. It really is. Let's talk a little bit about clearing a home. Because okay. I know that you've done that several times. Now, I've had a chance to witness things from time to time, and you know my opinion on things like sage. Sage is more a practice to make the family feel better about things, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of practices that do that throughout the years, because if you can give a positive feel to the family, then you've got a positive feel for the home. But let's talk about how you do that, how it's gotten results from time to time, and why you do that.
We use sage seldomly anymore. We used to use it quite a bit, but I've got a good source for holy water, holy oil, and things like that. So we go around and we do more of a Christian Catholic kind of a blessing throughout the house. But then again, if the people aren't of that mindset, you know, we'll come in and we'll smudge. We use Palo Santo wood. We use Palo Santo oil. Whichever we need to do that makes the family feel better and that we know will actually try to clear the house out. For the most part, though, prayers and holy water or holy oil work wonders in the house. And, of course, you're going to want to open up your front door or your back door, whichever you prefer. There's just a couple of inches. And start at the farthest point away from the door and hit every room, every opening, every corner, everything that you can get to, get all of it, and move yourself around the house. And then if it's a two-story, of course, you get that completely cleared out. Go downstairs and walk completely around. And the last thing you should do is walk out that door and get the front stoop and even some of the sidewalks and steps if there are any. Just get everything out of that house. Now, you could do that, like I said, with holy water. You could do it with holy tar water, blessed tar water. You can do that. You could do it with sage and cedar, all sorts of different things that you could do it with. But once again, you're trying to get rid of negative energies, push them out that door, send them on their way, and make the family feel better. That's really the important thing. If the family feels better in their own home, you've accomplished your task.
That's a thing that I think people don't understand. A lot of people think that clearing a home, blessing a home, and so forth is a way to remove spirits, ghosts, and evil things from the home. And the fact is,
sometimes it is. Sometimes you can get rid of them. But for the most part, it's calming everything down. Yeah.
But it's mostly just a belief. The reality is, if you have something truly evil in the home that doesn't want to go, it's going to be, excuse the term when I say this, listeners, but it's going to be a hell of a battle. And a lot of times that battle has to be won by the person or the people in the home.
Right.
You can help. You can do whatever's necessary. But ultimately, they're the ones that have to buck up and say, I've had enough in their own way.
It's their house.
However, it's their home.
They have to kick it out.
However, there's nothing wrong with a blessing. There's nothing wrong with a clearing. There's nothing wrong with a smudging. Originally, they were designed for the purpose they're still used for today. They give comfort to the people in the home. If you have comfort and you believe in what's going on and it makes you feel better, the odds of you taking control as an individual and saying, look, I've had enough, it's time to go, puts the ball in your court.
Exactly.
And that's a part of what really happens with investigators when they're doing that.
And when we go through and do our investigations, and then they want to have, you know, some sort of blessing or something done, why not? We'll go through. I'm an ordained minister. I can go through and do a blessing just perfectly fine. And I teach them how to do it themselves. It's their home. They know how to say prayers. You know, I'll leave them some holy water. Here you go. I've got, you know, I can get tons of it. So you do the prayers, you show them what to do, you show them the, you know, how to do it properly so that you're chasing anything bad out that front door. And even if it's just a mental thing that you're doing, you know, you're setting the house and setting everybody, we have set everything evil outside that door. It makes them feel better. And it really sets the different tone in that home. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but that's what you're doing. You're trying to set a different tone. If you can chase something out of the house while you're doing it, great. If you can knock all the energy out of that thing, great. You know, there's a lot of things you can do to decrease the amount of energy that these entities in the house have. And that's a lot of prayer sometimes. That's your smudging. That's you're changing it from a negative attitude to a positive attitude. And they have nothing to gather from the people to have to get stronger themselves. If everybody's happy, there's just no bad energy for them to pick up on. Nothing negative.
Well, yeah, and it may sound corny to some listeners, but reality is it's not unlike anything else. How many times have you actually said in your life, gee, that must be nice, as an example. Why do we go window shopping? We go window shopping because, gee, it must be nice to own something like that. How does it feel when you actually buy that?
Well, it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it?
Wonderful feeling. Makes you feel great. Hey, look, I accomplished something. I bought this. Blessings are kind of the same way in that feeling of things. As corny as it may seem, the smallest and simplest things can turn around a belief or turn around a person's aspect of how they see life.
Exactly. And of course, if they believe in whatever religion they happen to believe in, you know, and you could do something for them in that aspect of religion, that'll make them feel even better. You know, so that's really adding to it right there. You're uplifting their own beliefs in clearing their house, and it makes them feel empowered and able to do it themselves.
Let's talk a little bit about your books. I know you're a writer, Joe, so I want everybody to know where to find you before we start closing out the show and talk about your paranormal investigation website so that if anybody's listening from your local area, they'll know where to find you.
Okay, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/PCP Investigations. We've just revamped the page, so it's doing really good, and we're working on our internet-based page at http://www.pacificcoastparanormal.com. We can be reached at PCPI, Pacific Coast Paranormal Investigations, PCPI@pacificcoastparanormal.com. We've got an 800 number, 833-9-GHOSTS. So if you're in the area and you need some help, just give us a call. It rings through to my cell phone, and it'll pass on to Christy's cell phone, and they go to voicemail after that, if neither one of us are able to pick up. But we've got all this settled in. In fact, we're becoming an LLC right now, being insured, the whole nine yards. I mean, we're becoming an actual entity, pardon the pun, in the business world. Trying to take on, we're going to do some charity work and things like that for some of the old historic buildings in the area. My books can be found on Amazon right now. The first two I've got out, The Blue Orb by J.E. Thompson and 13 Tales of the Paranormal, also available on Amazon by J.E. Thompson. I'm working on three more as we speak. The Perfect Family, which is going to be a little bit more horror than the normal ghost stories that I write. This book idea came to me, and I just said, I've got to go with it. And I'm about 100 pages out, so it won't take too much longer till it's ready for the publisher. Then I'm working on one called Insane, about this kid who grows up not believing in ghosts, and, well, all sorts of things happen. And then sort of a more fun one is going to be the first book of a trilogy, the Books of Power trilogy. And it's about a coven of witches who are going out trying to protect themselves from other covens and trying to gain the energy or the power that they need, et cetera. But it's kind of a more fun story than anything else. But that's what I've got going on right now, and research on other books, too, at the same time.
It takes a lot to write a book, so... But you have some wonderful stories, listeners. He's got a great couple of books that, like you said, is already out. If you get a chance, you should read them. I spent, I think, a week reading both of your books, but they were amazing. And, I mean, you're a great writer, Joe.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality, everybody, on BBS Radio. We've been speaking to Joe Thompson, a investigator at PCPI for about 20 years that works in some very unique fields. Just so that everybody is aware, our test run for Paranormal Truth and Reality ran on the Marengo Schoolhouse last weekend. We did have several investigators there. We had Kenny G from the Ghost Hunters. I had another gentleman join us. Joe, I do believe, is his name, actually, just not Thompson, but his name is Joe. He's a wonderful guy. We got some interesting recordings of myself at the time, and we got some interesting EVPs and a few other things. A lot of things were debunked at the end of it. I'm going to put up a lot of that footage on Paranormal Truth and Reality, also Real Time Paranormal, and on my Facebook page as I get it together. So make sure that you pay attention to that because it's unique. You get to see a perspective from the eyes of the ghost hunters and the people walking through the ghost tours. And during the investigation, I am just a host. So I'm popping in, telling you what's going on, what we just caught so that you can review it, and how we're going to try to debunk it later with other investigators, which is the whole concept of paranormal reality that is coming out here in 2018 and 2019. We have a set of five shows that will be airing on stream, hopefully also on television if everything works out right, but you will be seeing these shows on Netflix definitely, which the deal has already been worked out on. So make sure you pay attention to it once we get the casting and reviews together. Hopefully, Joe, you can be a part of that somewhere along the line. I'd love to have you come back, review all the evidence, do some interviews, and get your perspective on it, because it's going to be different since we have the teams coming in and we're going to be hosting them. We're going to use separate investigators that are professionals to look over all the evidence and say, this is what I think is going on, and maybe even visit a couple of the locations separately so that we can get both aspects of this is what happens in the moment, this is how the teams work on it, and this is how other people view it.
That sounds fascinating. I'd love to be part of that.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful new concept, so I'm kind of glad to introduce it on tonight's radio show. We've been trying to put it together for about a year and a half, and you know how it goes when you're doing all these legals and you're talking to producers. It's a whole step-by-step process, and you don't want to give it away, because if you give it away too early, then 100 people steal it before it goes out.
Exactly.
But I think it's a very wonderful thing. I've been having an enjoyable conversation with Joe Thompson here on Paranormal Truth and Reality. We're going to go ahead and let you go this evening. It's been a pleasure, Joe. You're always welcome back, especially after you get things together with your teams. I think I enjoy every conversation we have. I think it's a great personal conversation, and it's great to have you on the show itself. We always get into in-depth conversations, and you always bring something new to the tape. So join us on Art Real-Time Paranormal anytime. Make sure that you visit Joe on his Facebook page. I'm going to end the audience with what I end every single show. As you learned today from a real paranormal investigator, when you're looking into the paranormal, always take two steps back. Listen to those people who've been doing it for a while. Understand that it's a personal journey for everybody, but there are some logistics that actually come into play from real investigators that know what they're doing. And in the paranormal, truth should always be the reality around you. I'm going to let everybody enjoy their weekend. It's been great talking to you. We'll see you next week.